Welcome to All About Jack, a podcast feature of EssentialCSLewis.com. Today's show is the first of a special series of episodes to honor the legacy of Walter Hooper, who died December 7th, 2020. In a few moments, you'll hear a concise overview of his life, but briefly, for those who may not remember, Walter Hooper served as the literary executor of the C.S. Lewis estate for many years, and as a result, wrote a good bit on C.S. Lewis and edited many volumes of material by Lewis after his death. After the concise summary of Walter's life, you'll hear from seven other individuals providing their own personal reflections about him. I'll give you the name of each person and a very short blurb about them, and conclude by telling about my own encounter with Walter Hooper. However, before getting into that, let me explain how this is part of a series of episodes. As you may know, there are several other podcasts related to Lewis, some focusing just on Narnia. These programs will either be sharing other reflections like you hear today, or offer something related. I'll share more about this at the end, but you can also check the show notes of this episode to discover links to those podcasts. And of course, feel free to offer in the comments your own reflections about what Walter Hooper has meant to you. First up again is an overview of Walter's life. This is done by Dr. Harry Lee Poe from Union University, author of Becoming C.S. Lewis.
When we published C.S. Lewis Remembered in 2006, Walter Hooper, as one of the contributors, was asked to provide a brief biographical sketch to be included in the volume. And this is the sketch he provided. Walter Hooper, the literary advisor to the estate of C.S. Lewis, was born in Reidsville, North Carolina in 1931. Shortly after taking his degree from the University of North Carolina in 1953, he discovered the writings of C.S. Lewis. It was the greatest watershed of his life, and he began corresponding with Lewis in 1954. Eventually, Lewis invited Hooper to meet him in Oxford, and not long after they met, in June 1963, Lewis asked the young man to become his secretary. There followed the happiest days of Hooper's life, for he found Lewis 1,000 times more interesting than his books. The privilege was, however, to be short-lived, for Lewis died in November 1963. Walter was invited to edit Lewis's literary remains, and this has occupied him for the last 40 years. Hooper, who lives in Oxford, is the editor of the collected letters of C.S. Lewis and the author of C.S. Lewis, A Companion and Guide, and, with Roger Lancelin Green, C.S. Lewis, A Biography. This brief sketch that Walter wrote himself is modest and does not really tell us all about the man who, for many decades, kept C.S. Lewis in print. It leaves out the fact that he served in the army and that after his army service, he began a literary career. He began graduate studies at the University of Kentucky, where he was an instructor in English. And it was in that capacity that he was serving when he finally met Lewis. And it was the reason he had to return to Kentucky at the end of the summer of 1963 to complete his contractual obligations, before his intention of returning to Oxford to continue to serve Lewis. But during that last semester in Kentucky, of course, Lewis died. Nonetheless, Hooper did return to Oxford. He was encouraged to do so by Austin and Catherine Farrar, the close friends of Jack and Joy Lewis. And Hooper had met them during the summer of 63, and they encouraged him to return because, there, as they said, there was work for him to do. Hooper didn't know exactly what that work might be, but he soon discovered what it would be. he took up theological studies at Oxford, and he was ordained a priest of the Church of England. Later in life, he would convert to Catholicism. But in those early days, he became chaplain of Wadham College from 1965 to 1967, and then chaplain at Jesus College from 1967 to 1971. Now, during those years of chaplaincy, he was busy editing the poetry of Lewis and beginning to discover the bibliography of Lewis. Lewis did not actually have a record of what he had published, and there was no real record of what Lewis had published. And so during his chaplaincy years, Hooper made his way to the great Bodleian Library by law, the repository of everything published in Britain. And there, over many years, he searched out and found every article, every sermon, everything that Lewis had published, every poem under a pseudonym. And then he began the tedious work of collecting those different bits of writing and editing them, putting them together in individual volumes. Now, in 1971, the Lewis estate was managed by Owen Barfield and Cecil Harwood, who were two of Lewis's best friends. Barfield, of course, a lawyer. And the work was beginning to grow because Lewis, rather than declining in sale of his works, was actually growing. And so at that point, the estate hired Hooper to come and work with a salary to do the hard work of negotiating with publishers and keeping Lewis's books in print. And it was an enormous job, because so many of Lewis's works had gone out of print. Some were unavailable to a broader market. His sermons, his essays, his poetry had never really been collected. So over the years, Hooper published that childhood writing of Lewis, Boxen. He published Christian Reflections, God in the Dock, Narrative Poems, Of Other Worlds, Essays and Stories, Of This and Other Worlds, Poems, Present Concerns, Selected Literary Essays, Studies in Medieval and Renaissance Literature, The Dark Tower and Other Stories, and a revised and expanded version of The Weight of Glory. All of these volumes that contain essays that people are so familiar with would not be available without the work of Walter Hooper. The tedious, laborious, but careful work of editing. But beyond these, Hooper made available to scholars and to those interested in Lewis access to Lewis in a way that is almost unimaginable. He edited the diaries of Lewis, written between 1922 and 1927. He edited the letters of Lewis to Arthur Greaves. These letters from 1914 to 1963 give us perhaps our most intimate glimpse of Lewis. But then on the basis of these, he moved forward and edited three massive volumes of the collected letters of C.S. Lewis. And these publications have made Lewis accessible in a way that he would not have been to most people. These letters are scattered across several major repositories. The Bodleian Library in Oxford holds some, and the Wade Center in Wheaton holds some, but others are privately held. And so writing about Lewis has now been made, well, quite easy for those of us who do biographical work of Lewis. And so we are indebted to Walter Hooper for his dedication, for his steadiness, for his thoroughness, for his dogged determination. And he is someone who has blessed the world by his scholarship.
Dr. Bruce R. Johnson, General Editor, Zainzuk, the C.S. Lewis Journal.
The first thing I need to say about Walter Hooper is that he was a kind man. He was so generous with his time to Lewis readers and Lewis scholars. And he had patience with people that asked very elementary questions. He took the time with them. And I will always remember that fondly when I think of Walter. He was an encouragement to me when we started Zainzuk, the C.S. Lewis Journal. He agreed to be part of our advisory board from the very start. And when we sent him a copy of the very first volume, he responded right away. And in glowing terms, he said, "Oh, this is beautiful." He said, "I don't know of a volume of Lewis's own works that is this beautiful." And that was an extraordinarily kind thing to say. Flattery or something else, but he wanted to encourage people, and I observed him doing that time and time again. As it happened, soon after his death, I realized that he'd given me two of his essays, unpublished essays, to consider for some projects I was doing together with other people. One of them was the second part of a lecture he gave in 2013, the occasion of the 50th anniversary of Lewis's death. And in this essay, Hooper talks about his own life's journey after C.S. Lewis died. And I thought I'd read three of the opening paragraphs of that essay. Hooper writes, "Everything seemed lost when C.S. Lewis died. He'd been the center of my life since I first came across his writing in 1953. And during the months we were together, I'd come to love him. Now that he was dead, what was I to do? I was praying about this when I received a letter from those close friends of Lewis I'd come to know best during the summer of 1963, Austin Fair, the warden of Keble College, and his wife, Catherine. The Ferrers felt there was something for me to do in Oxford, and they urged me to come back, staying with them in Keble College. I took them at their word and returned to Oxford in January 1964. I was a guest of the Ferrers in Keble College, and I soon came to know Lewis's brother, Warney. To avoid confusing the two, I'll give them the names their friends used. C.S. Lewis was Jack, and Warren Lewis was Warney. Soon after arriving back in Oxford, I went to the kilns to call on Warney. You will remember Jack writing about his mother's death in Surprised by Joy, where he said, there was to be no more of the old security. It was sea and islands now. The great continent had sunk like Atlantis. Now that applied to Warney, who had lost not only his best friend, but the companion of a lifetime. Warney was a few years older than Jack, but his dependence on Jack made him seem the younger of the two. I was surprised, given his terrible loss, how he could be so kind to me. We met as friends and fellow mourners. And I was deeply touched when he said his brother often wanted my company during the last weeks of his life. Warney was a mild version of Jack. And as we talked about his brother, I remembered the passage in The Four Loves where Jack pointed that in each of my friends, there was something that only some other friend can fully bring out. And now that his brother was dead, all would lose much of the old Warney that only Jack brought. I thought that was a marvelous description, not only of what was going on in Warney's life and in Walter's life, but how many of us feel that work with Walter and knew him. It's not quite the same. There's a gap for all those who are in that, what Hooper called that small band, that small company of Lewis scholars. And the other passage that I'd like to read is from an essay that will be published hopefully in the coming year or two. And in this one, Walter Hooper focuses on a very early part of Lewis's academic career in 1923. Just the fall before that, Lewis had been asked to be part of an English discussion group led by George Stuart Gordon. Gordon later became the president of Magdalen College, Oxford. So not only was Gordon a teacher of Lewis, he was also Lewis's boss for some time. And Hooper writes this short introduction, and then he quotes from a very obscure piece that most people don't know that Lewis wrote. So Walter Hooper writes, "What did Lewis think of George S. Gordon and his discussion class? Writing in Mary Gordon's biography of her husband, C.S. Lewis said, 'One of the pleasantest institutions in the English school, as I first knew it, was Gordon's weekly discussion class. Each tutor could send only one or two of his pupils to it. So we liked to regard ourselves as a corps d'élite. It was held sometimes in a committee room and sometimes in Gordon's house. And it was there I first met Neville Coghill. I don't remember the names of most of the others, although faces, and indeed the whole scene, come back to me very clearly, especially Gordon himself, leonine and tolerant at the head of the table, looking very much less alert than he actually was. It was work that exactly suited him, to seem to be doing nothing, and yet to guide the whole debate.'" And I think of that last sentence when I think of Walter Hooper, to seem to be doing nothing and yet to guide the whole debate. In the last few years of Walter Hooper's life, he was diminished in different ways. It was very hard for him physically to complete the 3-volume collected letters of C.S. Lewis. And after that, we all worried that he was in his last years then. And yet he continued. It's like we had a whole extra decade of learning and enjoying Walter than we thought we would have had. So we will all miss him, but we all owe Walter such a debt for all of the work that he did in making sure that the work and the memory of C.S. Lewis would remain for future generations.
Dr. K. Allen Snyder, author of America Discovers C.S. Lewis, His Profound Impact.
My interactions with Walter Hooper were not numerous, but they were very, very influential for me. Back in 2014, as a university professor, my university gave me a sabbatical, and I used that sabbatical to go to the Wade Center. I was looking to write something about C.S. Lewis, and the niche that I found was his relationship with Americans. And what did come out of that eventually was a book, America Discovers C.S. Lewis. But of course, one of those Americans that I really wanted to focus on was Walter Hooper. I kind of remember, you know, when Walter Hooper showed up at Lewis's house, he talked about, gee, am I just bothering this man? Should I even bother to be here? But he was graciously received. Well, the same kind of thing kind of happened to me. Because I asked the people at the Wade Center, do you have Walter Hooper's email? Could I possibly write to him? And so they gave me that, and I kind of sat for a while saying, now what do I say to this man who has done so much for the legacy of C.S. Lewis? He doesn't know me from Adam. All I can do is just tell him I'm trying to write a book about Lewis's interactions with Americans, and that I obviously want a chapter on him. Because he, you know, was Lewis's secretary and then the editor of his literary estate after that. I mean, how do you leave him out? He was still active, and so I wanted to contact him. And from the very beginning, when I just laid out to him in an email exactly what I was trying to accomplish, he was probably the most gracious person. And I was just so thankful that he was so receptive to someone he had never met before. And he sent me all kinds of good information, things that he had written that would help give me the kind of the background that I needed, the basis for writing the chapter on him. And then even at one point, you know, I wanted an endorsement from him on the back of the book, which eventually did arrive. But I was a little concerned at one point. I kept writing emails and I never got a response. And then finally he wrote to me and said, "Oh, I'm so sorry. I've been in Italy for a while." So I was very glad he was back. So he did write an endorsement on the back of the book. I was actually kind of surprised. His ending line on that endorsement was, "I can honestly say I understand Lewis so much better having read this book." And I thought, is that even possible? How in the world could anything that I wrote actually help Walter Hooper understand Lewis better? I mean, he's the one who knew Lewis. I never met Lewis. But then when the book came out and I went back to teaching again, I ended up working with another professor to go over to England with some of our students. And one of the places we were going to go was Oxford. And so I thought, okay, we need to go to the kilns. And I know that Walter is in the Oxford area. So I contacted him and said, "Could you meet us and talk to my students? I would love for them to get to know you." And of course, I wanted to get to meet him and know him a little bit better also. And again, so graciously, he said, "I would be very, very glad to do so." And so when we went over, I remember going on the tour of the kilns and being upstairs in Lewis's bedroom and looking out the window of the bedroom, and suddenly I saw Walter arriving in a taxi. That's where I took my first picture of him. And then we went downstairs, and the group that I was with, I decided to depart from them briefly and went over and introduced myself to Walter as he was sitting in the chair in Lewis's study. And again, reminded him who I was, because I'm always of the opinion, he probably forgot who I was, but he hadn't. And that was just so nice. And I said, "By the way, there are other people on this tour besides my students. Would you mind if we invited everyone to be part of this session?" And he said, "Oh, I would just love to do that." And so I went back in, was able to announce to everyone else, we were going to meet with Walter Hooper today, just my group, but I've asked him if there's anybody else here who would like to meet with him. He'd be glad to do that also. I can't tell you what the response to that group was, how happy they were. What an opportunity to meet Walter Hooper. And so he spoke with us. He answered questions. He shared his testimony. And of course, I got my obligatory picture with him by myself. Everybody has one of those, I'm sure. And but I asked him, "Did you ever get an actual copy of my book from the publisher?" And he said, no, he hadn't, even though he'd read the manuscript. And so I said, "Oh, I'm going to send you copies." And so when I got back home, I did send him a couple copies. I got an email from him thanking me. And I had also written some blogs about our experience at the kilns and meeting with him. He thanked me for what he called fascinating blogs. I hope that's true. He said he received the two copies of my books. He said he's savoring it now. He loved the way I treated Chad Walsh. And he just, said so many nice things in that email. And then he kind of ended it by saying, "I hope someday I'm as nice as you." And I said, "What? You're about the nicest person that anybody could ever meet." And then he ended it with, "Your friend, Walter." And I think that really does say a lot about him. He was a friend to people. He enjoyed meeting people. He enjoyed telling about his experiences with Lewis. And later, after he had done a close reading of my book, he said, he again sent me an email. I won't go into all the specifics of it, but it was something that really touched me because it showed that he had truly read the book closely. And he shared an appreciation for it that I couldn't believe, because I mean, here's this man who has done so much, and who am I? But yet he truly appreciated what I had written. So my testimony about Walter Hooper, I wish I could have met him again. I did not go to Oxbridge in 2017, but I discovered, and I've seen the video since then, that when he was interviewed at Oxbridge, he mentioned me and my book specifically in that interview. So this is a man who meets someone he's never really known before, who has no idea if he's written anything worthwhile, but makes him feel like he has. And again, I kind of go back to when Lewis took Hooper to his first Inklings meeting. And Hooper said afterwards he never realized that he could sound so intelligent. And Lewis helped bring that out of him. Well, I think Walter Hooper has done that for people too. And so when I heard of his passing, all these things just kind of flooded back. And my deep appreciation for Walter Hooper.
Dr. Michael J. Christensen, Northwind Theological Seminary, author of C.S. Lewis on Scripture.
I was a young man, a recent college graduate, when I first met Walter Hooper on my trip to Europe, and I stopped in Oxford as I was wandering around Europe on Eurail and hitchhiking through UK. I met Walter at the Bird and Baby pub in 1979. We talked, I remember we were talking about C.S. Lewis's marriage and sexuality and whether Lewis and Joy consummated their marriage. This was on Walter Hooper's mind, I guess, as I was a college student, it was on my mind, so I wanted to learn all I could about C.S. Lewis and Joy's married life. But Walter Hooper also introduced me during that trip to Owen Barfield, and I got an invitation from Barfield to come and have tea and biscuits with him through Walter Hooper's introduction. I later ran into Walter Hooper while I was in seminary at Yale Divinity School when he came to New Haven for a lecture there. Walter shared some great Lewis research with me and artifacts he showed me, encouraged me to write and to rewrite and to publish. More than any other Lewis enthusiast, you know, Walter dedicated his life to promoting Lewis's legacy, really around the world. You know, he's an old world gentleman and scholar, and I think also he was a great man. He is a great man. I'll always remember the last time I saw him, 2017, after Oxbridge Conference. My wife Rebecca and I were invited to his apartment in the afternoon for tea and biscuits. And there's where I met his wonderful beloved cat, Blessed Lucy of Narnia, and saw his collection, his eclectic and elaborate collection and decoration of his apartment. And I'll never forget that time of when Walter said to me three times, repeating himself, "You must finish your book. You must rewrite your book and incorporate the letters. There are many letters that have been published since you wrote your book, Michael. Rewrite it, republish it. It's a good book, and it's worth enlarging and revising." So he challenged me, and that's why I'm working on it today, is his challenge to take what he considered a good book and make it an even better one. As I posted today earlier, Walter Hooper died yesterday, and as I posted today on our Facebook page, a giant of a tree with fruitful branches has fallen, yet with living roots in another world. May Blessed Lucy and all the saints bring comfort and peace on his way to see Aslan, known there by a different name. We will miss Walter Hooper.
Colin Duryea, writer and independent scholar, author of The Oxford Inklings, Lewis, Tolkien, and Their Circle.
I've come across Walter Hooper quite a few times over many years, and for much of his recent life, he's lived in Oxford, and I live quite close to Oxford. The first time I had contact with him must have been about 40 years ago, when I was editor of a Christian magazine, and I decided to interview him about a book he'd edited, which was just published, called They Stand Together, which was C.S. Lewis's letters to his lifelong friend, Arthur Greaves, who was from Northern Ireland, like Lewis was. And I was very struck by that, the collection of letters, and I had a wonderful interview with him. And one of the things he pointed out, that it was more of an autobiography of C.S. Lewis than Lewis's book, Surprised by Joy. And I think there was some truth in that. And I was very impressed by the way that Walter had collected the letters together. It's very powerful. And then I bumped into him at various times, like, for example, particularly the centenary year, the centenary of Lewis's birth. We met in Belfast in Northern Ireland, where there was a conference, and also in Granada in southern Spain. And as we met often, we got to know each other better. And one thing that really struck me about Walter was that he was very much an encourager. I remember I was giving a talk to the Oxford University C.S. Lewis Society, and at the end you get a barrage of questions, and I was answering the questions, and Walter said to me afterwards, he said, "Oh, you answered questions just like C.S. Lewis." Now, I don't think he was trying to give me an ego burst or anything. I think what he was doing was encouraging, and he was constantly always encouraging, and I found that very helpful. If you're a writer, you're quite vulnerable, when people slag your work or something like that. But Walter is the opposite. He was very encouraging, and when he wrote endorsements for my books, he always said something very, very nice about them. But at the same time, he was truthful. If, say, he was writing a review and there's something about your book that he felt could be improved, he would mention that. So he was an honest person. And I was struck by his memory, the way that he was able to, he had a very retentive memory. I know memory is retentive anyway, but his was particularly good. He could remember all kinds of stories, and anybody that's heard him speak will probably remember some of the little stories that he mentioned. When last year I was doing a lot of tours of the kilns, which alas weren't happening this year because of the coronavirus. It wasn't possible to have tours in the house anymore. But I found that if I put little stories in here and there when I was walking through the kilns, it really did the trick to people got very interested and they enjoyed talk. And that was with same with Walter when he was speaking. Sometimes you might hear the same story a few times. But today, when I was looking through my office for various things to do with Walter, to refresh my memory and everything like that, because I hadn't seen him for over a year when I bumped into him in Oxford, and he looked very frail at that time, and he told me he was rushing to an appointment, a medical appointment, I think it was. And I've known since then that he wasn't all that well. But just to give you an example of the kind of story that he would often come up with. And this is in a review I found today, which he did of my book, The Inklings Handbook, which I wrote with my friend David Porter. And he wrote this very nice review, a very honest review. But he started off with this little story, and it's only one long sentence. So I'll read it to you. "My happiest hours," C.S. Lewis once said, "are spent sitting up till the small hours in someone's college rooms, talking nonsense, poetry, theology, metaphysics, over beer, tea, and pipes." And that was the beginning of the review. And he went on from that to say that Lewis was really talking about the Inklings. And it was a very good way of entering the review. And said lots of other interesting things there. It was he's a very good review writer, and he's a very good endorser of books. I was always pleased if he said that he would endorse a book for me. So he was a good storyteller. And one thing that struck me much about Walter was the way that he decided to stay in the Oxford area. He got very attached to C.S. Lewis, even though when he first met him, it was a very brief period of the summer of the year that C.S. Lewis died, 1963. So the two of them were together just for a brief period, and they were talking about Walter was talking about he was offering to be a secretary towards Lewis, help him in various tasks that he was finding more difficult that he's got, as Lewis himself had failing health. And then Walter had to go back to the States to fulfill a teaching job that he had. And Lewis died while he was away, so he'd only had that short time. But it had given him a very deep insight into what made Lewis tick, if you like that. I know Tolkien once was asked what made him tick, and he didn't like that because he said, "Well, human beings are not machines. We don't tick." But certainly he really went to the heart of who Lewis was. There was one article in a British paper which described Walter as C.S. Lewis's other American, the first American being Joy Davidman, of course, who Lewis ultimately married. One thing that's very remarkable about Walter is that he will be very missed, especially for people that like to read Lewis and appreciate the many books that have been published, which never would have existed as publications, but for Walter's hard work. Most of this, particularly stunning, is the work that he did on the three volumes of the collected letters of Lewis. He's amazingly helpful by the footnotes that he gave, which gave you lead into many people that you'd never be able to track down on your own very easily. But Walter managed to and give details and when people died and so on, which was extraordinarily helpful. In the last period of his life, he was hoping very much to do a revised edition of the collected letters, and he told me that it might be more than three volumes, and that Cambridge University Press were interested in doing it. But sadly, he didn't get a red light from Cambridge University Press. So I don't know how far he'd got with doing a revised version. But I would long to see that, and maybe never will. But I owe so much to Walter, and I'm sure many people do. And in the conversations people may have had with him have been very special.
Dr. Joel Heck, Concordia University, Texas, author of Chronologically Lewis at joelheck.com.
I first met Walter Hooper in 1995. I had the privilege of teaching a study abroad program in London. I was at a Church of England seminary in Southgate, England, called Oak Hill College. And I drove over with several of my students to Oxford to attend a meeting of the Oxford C.S. Lewis Society. I don't recall what the topic was or who spoke, but I do remember meeting Walter that night and finding Walter to be a very gracious and humble Christian man, which was an impression of Walter that continued throughout my relationship with him and is one of my firm impressions of Walter and his character. The next time I spent time with Walter was in 2004 when I was on an academic sabbatical. My wife and I were living at the Nonobis House on Leckford Road in Oxford, not too far from OCMS, the Oxford Center for Mission Studies, same place where Jerry Root earned his doctorate. And during that sabbatical, I worked with Walter a little bit in transcribing a few of the letters that Lewis had written that had not previously been transcribed. And so Walter gives a mention of Cheryl and me in the introduction to Collected Letters, Volume 3, which is where those transcriptions also ended up. So in addition, toward the end of my sabbatical in Oxford, it was probably late November, early December, I understood that Walter was not planning to include the Great War letters between Lewis and Barfield. And so I talked to him about that and convinced him to include them. And he said he would do it if I would do all the transcribing. So I had about 2 weeks of nonstop work in the Bodleian Library to complete that and then provide it to Walter before I left. One of the gracious things he did for me before we left, in addition to having us to his flat for a meal and the privilege of meeting Priscilla Tolkien on one of those occasions, he also gave me a gift of a first edition of the book Surprised by Joy that was inscribed by Walter as a gift to me, but also autographed by Lewis himself. So it had to be an extremely valuable book that Walter was willing to give up out of his collection. In addition to that, I want to say a word about a tribute to Walter Hooper and say words in praise of him. I mean, everybody knows, it seems to me, that Walter is the major character involved in preserving the legacy of C.S. Lewis through gathering his writings, his various poems and essays, convincing publishers to reprint books and essays that were out of print. And as a result of that, there are 19 titles, books with Walter Hooper's name on them, either as author or more often as editor, that are on my bookshelves in my office at the university where I teach. So I really give a tip of the hat to Walter Hooper for what he's done to preserve the writings of C.S. Lewis for so many people around the world to take advantage of, to read, and to be inspired by, even now, more than 50 years after Lewis's death. Probably the last thing I want to say about Walter is that because of his reputation and his accomplishments in the field of English language and literature, especially related to Lewis, my university, Concordia University, Texas, granted Walter an honorary doctorate in 2007. He came to Texas, to the States. He lectured at Texas State University and also at Concordia University. And on the occasion when he came to our institution to lecture about his experiences with C.S. Lewis, we bestowed upon him that honorary doctorate. And so those are my major memories of Walter Hooper. I remember him also in 2004 coming to the Non Nobis house where my wife and I were living and celebrating my birthday with me in October of 2004. My wife treated him to a couple of meals that were home-cooked meals that he enjoyed a great deal over at the place where we were staying, in addition to us spending some time at his flat there in North Oxford on Woodstock Road. At any rate, it's a privilege for me to be able to share some memories of Walter Hooper, and I want to say thanks for that privilege and for the opportunity to share my memories of Walter and to give these words of tribute to Walter Hooper, Dr. Walter Hooper.
Carolyn Curtis, award-winning journalist and co-editor of Women and C.S. Lewis.
I'll start with the first time I met Walter. It was either 2005 or 2006, and it was the first time that I ever actually stayed at the Kilns, overnight, I mean, and I've been to Lewis's home in Oxford several times and had the privilege of actually staying there twice, but the other time I spent my nights there, it was in Joy's room. So on this first occasion, I stayed in the room where Jack actually died, where he took his last breath and entered eternity into the presence of the Lord. So I thought that was just so special that I got to be in that particular room. So that week when I stayed at the Kilns, it was for a seminar with quite a number of other people. Lots of fun. The C.S. Lewis Foundation sponsored the seminar, and Walter came over and just entertained us all with his wonderfully told stories about C.S. Lewis. My favorite anecdote was a mischievous trick, as I'll characterize it, that Lewis played on Walter. Whenever I speak to groups about C.S. Lewis, I find that some people just cannot imagine what a really fun person he was and, you know, huge personality. And I think this story kind of illustrates that trait. So the two of them sat in the common room talking and drinking tea. Jack kept filling Walter's teacup. And after a while, Walter worked up the courage to excuse himself to go to the bathroom. So he asked Lewis for directions, and he probably said something like, "Could you show me to the bathroom?" Bathroom is an American term, and the term that the British often use for the small room that I know Walter needed to visit is, it's the loo, you know, they usually use that term. So here's something that makes this trick of Jack's even more funny to me, is that Walter was from the state of North Carolina here in America. And just hearing Walter tell this with his Southern demeanor was just so hilarious for some reason. In fact, I think it was Hal Poe who recently referred to Walter's accent as from the Piedmont area of North Carolina. Anyway, Lewis told Walter to follow him as he showed the way to the bathroom. Of course, I'm using air quotes around the word bathroom, and and I'm sure it was pronounced bathroom by Lewis. And then Lewis very slowly took an armload of towels out of the wardrobe, and he did it just as slowly as he possibly could. I'm sure just as mischievously as he could, knowing what discomfort Walter was in, just to tease him a little bit. And then Jack turned to Walter with all these towels. So poor Walter, who just seemed a little bit on the shy side to me as I was meeting him on this first occasion, admitted to Lewis that he did not need to climb into the large footed tub to scrub himself down. And he finally said that he needed to go into the separate room, which held a toilet, of course. So Jack, with his big personality and his great wit, replied to Walter something along the lines of, well, that should teach you as an American not to use the term, and I'm sure he said bathroom, you know. So our whole group that was staying there at the Kilns just laughed like maniacs because Walter seemed just really proper and all, and yet he told this funny story not only on himself but on Lewis, and of all things it was a bathroom story, which just, you know, we just didn't expect that at all. So I think this little trick Jack played shows how quickly Lewis was warming up to Walter, and I think that the relationship that day was, he was kind of interviewing Walter for the job of being his secretary, as they called it. And of course, we owe Walter such a debt of gratitude for all of the many things that he did to bring Lewis's work to life over the years. The second story I'll tell you involves my book on which I collaborated with Dr. Mary Pomeroy Key. Mary is the director of the C.S. Lewis Study Center in Northfield, Massachusetts. The name of the book is Women and C.S. Lewis, and the subtitle is What His Life and Literature Reveal for Today's Culture. My longtime literary agent found a home for it with an Oxford publishing house with the wonderful name of Lion Hudson. Just love that name. So I have to add that just in the past very few weeks, Women and C.S. Lewis has been published again as an audiobook. So now people who love all things Lewis can read the book or they can just listen to it, whichever they want. And the audiobook version includes just one endorsement, and it's the one by Walter Hooper, whereas the paperback version includes cover endorsements by Walter and also New York Times bestselling author Eric Metaxas, plus an endorsement by Marjorie Lamp Mead of Wheaton's Wade Center. And the cover also includes an endorsement by Brian Sibley, who's a prominent United Kingdom author and broadcaster who's known for his BBC serializations. But the inside of the book contains four full pages of other endorsements. So there's an anecdote with this one too, and that's because I wrote to Walter via the woman that I had dealt with at the C.S. Lewis estate. And Walter himself wrote back to me. I just cannot explain my joy, and I'm using air quotes again, because joy, of course, is just such a special word to anybody who admires C.S. Lewis. So Walter gave me the exact sentence he wanted to be used, and he also commented on some other aspects of the book, which sort of proved to me that he had actually read the manuscript or at least skimmed it, which was a big thrill. His endorsement simply read, "A remarkably fine tribute to C.S. Lewis." Walter's words grace not only the cover of the book, but now the recently released audio version of Women and C.S. Lewis. So I could give more anecdotes, but I think these are two of my best ones about the wonderful Walter Hooper, who I have to say I already miss. And I'm sure all Lewisians feel the same way that I do.
Dr. Don King, Montreat College, author of C.S. Lewis Poet, The Legacy of His Poetic Impulse.
I first began my friendship with Walter Hooper in the 90s when I was working on what came to be a book on Lewis as a poet. At the time, Walter was the most important person to be in contact with because he had access to a number of Lewis's poems that had never been published, or he had access to various versions of Lewis's poetry and poems, so obviously I needed to talk to him about that. The thing about Walter that I'm sure almost everybody will echo is that he was a very gracious and open and helpful person when it came to anything having to do with Lewis. There were a number of times when he was really the only person I could go to if I had a question or if there was something that wasn't clear having to do with Lewis's poetry. Walter, always gracious, always helpful, very much a gentleman, I think, would be the way I would describe him. Always wanting to see how he could help. And if I was stuck in a particular way, he might have a good suggestion for how to move on. In the succeeding years, I saw Walter fairly regularly, trips to Oxford. Sometimes when I was over there doing research, more recently, in the last 10 years or so, I've taken small groups of Montreat students to Oxford. The students have been involved in research projects on Lewis or one of the Inklings. And we've always managed to have a dinner with Walter. And as you can imagine, the students were just so delighted to be able to meet him and encounter him and his stories and his personality. I think he charmed them just like he charmed most of us. And certainly goes without saying probably that his work as Lewis's literary executor is simply amazing. Any writer would love to have a literary executor as committed and as passionate and as thorough as Walter. And certainly Lewis's legacy has been bolstered by the great work that Walter has done. He is a fellow North Carolinian, and actually I live near Asheville, North Carolina, and I'm not sure this part of his biography is known well, but he spent 1 year teaching in the Asheville area at Christ School, a private boys' school, and from everything I've heard, he had a good year here, and he always retained a little bit of his North Carolina accent, so always a pleasure to get with him and talk over things. For those listening who might want to find out a little bit more about some of Walter's work, you might want to make a pilgrimage to the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill and go to the archive that Walter started there at one of the libraries. There's a collection of letters and papers, quite fascinating. Again, mostly correspondence that Walter has had with various people over the year. I've been to the archive two or three times and found it incredibly helpful. So that's just a little plus for anybody who might be coming down south and want to find out a little bit more about Walter's work and his legacy. Anyway, I will miss him like many other people. I'm thankful to have had a chance to spend time with him, and I know that he and Lewis are probably enjoying one another as they worship together our Lord. Thank you, Walter.
I'll do the final reflection for this episode. Again, I'm William O'Flaherty, author of The Misquotable C.S. Lewis. I only had the privilege of meeting Walter once in July 2016. It was during an event hosted by Inklings Fellowship called An Inklings Week in Oxford. He was scheduled to speak, and so I knew I'd meet him at least briefly at that time. However, because of my All About Jack podcast, I hoped to get to interview him. While I did get to, it almost didn't happen. I sent him an email several months in advance, but didn't hear back from him as the scheduled event neared. So about a week before leaving for England that summer, I sent him another email. However, when my wife, Lori, and I left to stay overnight in Washington, D.C. before catching an early morning flight to London, he had not yet replied. Then that morning, while at the airport, I checked my email and noticed he replied and agreed to an interview. He apologized in the email for overlooking my initial request and suggested we had tea at his house the afternoon after he spoke to the group. It's an understatement to say I was excited. That day was July 20th. After he gave his talk, I only spoke with him briefly to confirm our meeting, as there were others who wanted to speak with him. That afternoon, my wife Lori and I arrived at the scheduled time, and he was very energetic and friendly. We had tea first and chatted casually about a variety of things before settling down for my interview. Even though he had been interviewed many, many times and answered a lot of similar questions, I did try my best to create questions that might bring out something new or fresh. You can check the show notes for a direct link to that interview. As others have mentioned, or you'll hear mentioned in other tributes, Walter was very kind and courteous. Even though he was obviously very knowledgeable about Lewis and his writings, he didn't come across as arrogant at all. It seems fitting to note that my wife instantly fell in love with Walter as he reminded her of her beloved grandfather from when she was growing up. Her grandfather, as Lori and I found to be true about Walter, was a person with a gentle spirit who was friendly to all and obviously loved his Lord deeply. Finally, let me share, as I told Walter that day, how much his work in the writings of C.S. Lewis and making it available to others has meant to me. I have greatly benefited from his efforts to make a lot of writings by Lewis that were not published before his death available to the world. In fact, it was early on when I began reading Lewis that I came across an edition of the Screwtape Letters where Walter and another person had created a very brief study guide that planted the seed for what eventually became a lifelong enjoyment of the Screwtape Letters and led to my own study guide related to that book. Thanks for listening to this first of several tribute podcasts to honor the legacy of Walter Hooper. I'll do another one with other people reflecting on him in less than 2 weeks from the date of this episode. I'll update the show notes when it is posted. The next group of reflections, however, will be found on another podcast called Pints with Jack. My show notes will have a general link to their program, and then when the show is released, I'll provide a direct link. Again, thanks for listening to All About Jack, a C.S. Lewis podcast, which is a feature of the website, EssentialCSLewis.com. I'm William O'Flaherty.